Yes, Lech Lecha.
So the section that I'd like to learn through today, let's go through the dispute between Avraham and Lot, where they part ways. Let's go through the psukim and study it up and learn that which we have as far as this episode goes. This is on page 58 and 59, the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, chapter 13. Towards the beginning of the parasha, Avraham, of course, receives his blessing. That or his test, I should really say, to leave his homeland to travel to Eretz Yisrael, which he does. And as soon as he gets there, there is a famine, and he's forced into Egypt. At which point, when he makes his way out of Egypt after all the episodes which take place down there, he comes back with great wealth. That's where in the story we're picking up with. So he's gone to Eretz Yisrael, Avraham. Famine forces him down to Egypt. He spends some time there. His wife Sarah, of course, is taken by King Paro. And he's afflicted, and then Paro kicks him out and says, you know, this really didn't work out very well for us. Go back to your homeland, and sends him with great wealth. And that's what we're going to pick up. We'll read the first four psukim just quickly to put in context, and we'll start with Pasuk K, really. So in the beginning of Pasuk, Aleph Ayal Avram mi Mitzrayim, hu v'ishto v'chol asher lo, v'lot imo hanegba. Avram goes up from Egypt, he and his wife, all that was hid, his, and Lot is with him, and they head up to the south. Avram has lots of stuff. He is literally heavy with his livestock, is the word the Torah uses. Kaved ma'od. He's laden with goods. He's a rich man at this point. And he travels minegev on Beis El. From all the places that he traveled originally, he now settles in them as well. And he calls B'Shem Hashem at the end of Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, after erecting an altar. Okay, that's just setting it up where we're up to. Let us get started. Vigam lilot, pasuk hey, verse 5. Vigam lilot haholeches Avram hayatzon uvakar ve'ohalim. And Lot, says the Torah, who went with Avram, also had flocks, cattle, and tents. Now, what's the story with Lot here? How did Lot end up in Mitzrayim?
Because he was with Avram.
In other words, when Avram and Sarah left Eretz Canaan because of the famine, the Torah says they took Lot's with him. So Lot goes down. Why do you think Lot became a wealthy person? Why did Avram become a wealthy person when he went down to Egypt? How did that happen? How did he become wealthy? Right? Paro gave him all the stuff. They went down. Paro took his wife. Paro gets afflicted and he says, you know what? This didn't really work. Go get out of here. And he gives him all sorts of goods along the way. Well, how did Lot get all this stuff? So Rashi says exactly like what Dina is saying. The Torah is saying, Apostle Kei, Haholeches Avram, if you want to follow inside, it's on the second column, the first, second line in Rashi. Haholeches Avram, why does the Torah specifically say, and to Lot, who traveled with Avraham, to say, Mi Goram Shahoyo Lozos, what cause, what's the source that Lot also ends up with tremendous wealth? How did that happen? Says Rashi, Halichoso im Avram, because he was traveling with Avram. So it's important for us to know, says Rashi, what the Torah is hinting at as we begin this story, which is going to be an important story as we get to this little dispute between Avram and Lot. Why do they get into a dispute? We know from previous knowledge they got a lot of stuff. Well, how did Avram get all of his stuff? Paro gave it to him on his way out of Mitzrayim. Where did Lot get his stuff from? Well, he also got it because of Paro on his way out of Egypt, but why did Lot get it on his way out of Egypt? Because he was hanging out with Avram. So you could trace it and attribute it. I now have riches, Lot should have been able to say to myself, because and only because of Avram. I have not done anything on my own. This is what I got. I got all my riches as a result of my traveling with Avram. Okay, let's read the next couple of psukim straight through, and then we'll ask an obvious question, which you probably, maybe you have or maybe you haven't thought of, but we're so familiar with that which we know already that we sometimes overlook this. And the land could not support them dwelling together, says the Torah in Pasuk Vav, Lo nasa osam ha'aretz l'shevas yachdov. Couldn't support them, ki hoya ruchusham rav. Their possessions were so abundant that the land could not support them, they were unable to dwell together. So the Torah sets us up. They have a lot of stuff. Too much stuff. So much stuff, in fact, that the land can't support them altogether. Obvious questions? Where are they? Where do they travel from after they left Egypt? Into Eretz Canaan, right? How big is Eretz Canaan? I mean, it's not enormous, but it's pretty big. So these two guys come out of Egypt, and they have a lot of wealth. So much wealth that the land can't support them? Two guys come out of Egypt into the land of Canaan. And, nope, there's just not enough pasture here for the two of us. That's what it says, right? Okay, so we have to figure that out. Yeah?
You have to have a certain amount of acreage for a certain amount of livestock, so there's not a lot of greenery in certain areas of Israel.
Okay, so you're saying...
not that far-fetched.
Could be where there just simply wasn't enough stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have the Torah describing a problem. There's a lot of livestock, a lot of cattle, and not enough space. Vayihi Riv, Pasuk Zayin 7, Vayihi Riv bein roe mikne Avram uvein roe mikne Lot. A quarrel broke out, a fight between the herdsmen of Avram's livestock and a herdsman of Lot's livestock. V'haknani v'haprizi oz yoshev ba'aretz. And this was during the time where the Kanaanim and the Perizim were dwelling in the land. So the Torah has set up for us, again, without looking at Rashi or any commentators, just reading the verses. What's been told to us is they now have a lot of stuff, the land can't hold them, and a fight breaks out between the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Avram. What are they fighting about?
Pasture. The grain.
Okay, I mean, it doesn't say. Yeah.
I think it wasn't really the land. I think it was their beliefs were so contrary to each other that they couldn't live with each other.
Okay, so far the Torah itself doesn't tell us anything. In other words, all you're saying good things, but what does the Torah itself tell us? They have a lot of stuff, the land can't hold them, and a fight breaks out. So listen to the next two psukim. So Avram says to Lot, please let there be no strife between me and you and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Avram says, listen, we're buddies. We're brothers. You're my nephew. I'm your uncle. There shouldn't be this kind of fighting. Is not all the land before you? Halochol ha'aretz lefanecha. He pared na me'olai. Please separate from me, Avram says to Lot. Im hasmol ve'emin, if you want to go to the left, I'll head to the right. Im hayamin v'asmil, you want to go to the right, I'll head to the left. What's Avram's response to this fight?
Separate.
Now, do we know what this fight is about?
We don't know here.
We don't know. Let's leave that blank. When the Torah says there's a fight, we don't know what. Avram's response to the fight is? We can't stay together. Now, what do we know from what's going to happen later on in the Parsha of the relationship that Avram feels towards his nephew Lot? There's a war between four kings and five kings, and who gets caught up in the middle of this?
Lot
does. He gets taken captive. What's Avram's response when his nephew is taken captive?
Comes to save him.
At risk of life and limb, battling these powerful kings, taking them on single-handedly with him and with Eliezer. His nephew Lot's been taken captive, and Avram says, well, I'm not going to leave him. I'm going to go out, risk my life, and save him. So there's clearly some form of a relationship between Avraham and Lot. That's clear. Yet, when a fight breaks out between the herdsmen of the two shepherds, what does Avram say to him? Let's just go our separate ways.
Oh, no. I mean, he said, please let there be no strife between you and me.
Okay.
And between our herdsmen. So let's separate. Let's separate so that we don't fight.
Okay, so would that be the greatest response? In other words, if you have a nephew who you're willing to risk your life for, and that's, so right away, I mean, you could say, let's just point out, what happened was, for a decision that Avram makes of, well, this isn't working, we can't stay together, and I'm not interested in trying, for a person who's about to risk his life to save, is of note that then the Torah itself doesn't tell us what they're fighting about. What is the issue at hand that's going on, that Avram is willing to say, this fight is too much, let there not be this strife, let us separate our own two ways and go off in our own directions. Okay, let's pause here and let's get into this just a little bit. Now, most of you, I am sure, are familiar with the Rashi he's going to quote. Let us start with the Ramban, therefore, who has a more pshat, in his words, pshat orientation. We're going to get, Rashi's going to quote a Medrash, which we'll get to. Ramban says, I have a pshat. Simple meaning of the pasuk is as follows. Says the Ramban, the land couldn't hold them, because as we mentioned, they have so much stuff. And Avram and Lot were geirim v'toshovim ba'aretz. They were foreigners in this land. This wasn't their land. As the pasuk says, who was in the land at the time? It was the Canaani and the Perizzi. These other two nations, they were the ones in charge of the land. Avram and Lot, it's not really, this isn't their business. Upachad Avram pen yishma ha-Canaani v'ha-Perizzi. Avraham was afraid that the inhabitants, the locals, would hear of them, would recognize, look at the size of this camp, Koved Miknehem, the size and value of their possessions, the Yigarshim, and kick them out. O Yaku Osam Lefichereb, or fight them with swords and take their stuff. Ki Yeshiva Sa'aret Atolahem Velo Liavram. Because at this point, did Avram have possession of the land?
No.
No, he'd been promised it, but it wasn't his. So Avram had this spiritual perspective of things that says, this is not yet my land. And it's a fascinating insight the Ramban has, just as far as simple reading of the Torah, Avram wants to fly under the radar. What happens if a local fight breaks out between these two herdsmen and all the locals who are in the cities and the surrounding areas, all of a sudden there's this big commotion going on. And they find, like, what's going on? Oh, there's these two really wealthy guys that have come out of Egypt with a tremendous amount of livestock, and they can't get it together. What do you, the local inhabitants, do to them?
Police them.
Get out of here. Right? Like, who needs you? So Avram says to Ramban, in the simple pshat in the story, says to Lot, listen, this isn't our land. We are, like, part, you know, Maisa of Asim and Labanim, always what happens to the forefathers, what happens to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is like a sign and foretelling what's going to be with us. When you're not in your land, you don't want to make trouble. You don't want infighting between you and your nephew and all of your possessions, and all that you're going to do is bring attention from the local inhabitants who suddenly say, what is this? Who? Look what they came, all these things, fighting, problems, the ruckus. Get out of here. So it says that I'm fine. Simple pshat, a little fascinating insight. Stay under the radar screen. This is not our land. This is not our home. We are travelers. We are guests. If we can't get together, we have to separate. So we, in answer to the question, why was this so bad that Avram felt he needed to separate? He was trying to spare his, I don't want to say spare his life, he was afraid he literally would die. The Ramban seems to imply he didn't want to get involved in a fight with the local inhabitants that he and his nephew couldn't get along and draw attention, stay under the radar screen. And this has certainly been part of Jewish history, part of Jewish culture, our genetic ingrained, inborn attitude in our foreign exile in Golos, stay under the radar. When things get really good, we like rise to the top. And then it's always, you know, getting pounded back down. And then we stay under the radar screen, things are quiet and good, and then someone take more and more prominent roles, and then it's under the radar screen. And certainly the generation, like my grandparents coming out of the war, do anything possible not to ever be noticed. I remember when we had, running for vice president of the U.S. That was Lieberman. That was like turning stomachs. Like, I can't, like, that's just horrible. So many of the Jews were like, this is amazing, this is the greatest thing ever, look what we've accomplished. And for many of us, it just turned stomach. Like, this is what we need, like, to be in such a position. Everything is going to be now about the Jews and Israel. And so Avram's approach with Lot, as he couldn't get along together, says in Poshet Pshat, says the Ramban, we can't get along, we're just going to draw attention to ourselves, they're going to come, they're going to kick us out, they're going to get rid of us, we want to be able to stay here, we're going to have to just separate if we can't get along. That, says the Ramban, it's the simple meaning of what the fight, why Avram responded in the way that he did. Says the Ramban, quoting Rashi, we'll read it out of Rashi himself, Rashi has a medrash. Rashi says there's something else was going on over here. Something else was going on. Says Rashi, if you're going to read it inside, let's see it on the second column of page 58, Pasuk Zayin, five lines down in Rashi. Vayehi Riv, says Rashi, Lefi Shehoyu Royav Shalot Rishoyim. The shepherds of Lot were wicked people. Umarim behemtam besados achem. They used to allow their animals to graze in others' fields, in private fields. So the land couldn't contain them, meaning the land that wasn't privately owned. There was only so much publicly owned fields that they needed to share. And the shepherds of Lot said, listen, there's just not enough space for the two of us in these public areas. We're going to take our stuff and graze in privately owned fields. And the shepherds of Avram used to give him rebuke. He said, what are you doing? That doesn't belong to us. You can't let your animals graze in someone else's field. That's stealing. Now that would have been itself sufficient. You have a fight. The shepherds of Lot were wicked people. They were interested in thievery. They weren't interested in paying. They were allowing people to take things. And Avram was saying, it's not right. Back and forth. But Rashi quotes from the sages that the dispute was far deeper than that. It wasn't just a matter that the shepherds of Lot were willing to steal and the shepherds of Avram weren't. The shepherds of Lot had a justification. They claimed that something more than just, we don't care, we're going to graze. Says Rashi, Vehem omrim nasna ha'aretz li Avram. They said, what are you talking about? This land was given to Avram. Don't you remember the promise that Avram received when he was told to leave his homeland? Lech lecha el eretz, my lad, leave your homeland, come to this land, I'm going to give it to you and to your children after you. It'll be a great place to be. Wait, but that's given to Avram and his children. Why are the shepherds of Lot, his nephew, thinking that that's relevant to them, the fact that it's been promised to Avram? Velo ein yorish. Avram doesn't have any children at this point. The shepherds of Lot say, this land was promised to Avram. Guess how old Avram is? He doesn't have any children. What do you think is going to be with the promise to Avram that he's been given this land? He doesn't have any descendants. The Lot, Bein Achiv Yorsho. So Lot, his nephew, will be next in line. He's going to inherit the land. Vein Zegezel. This is not thievery, please. Do not claim me to be a thief, they argued. We have every right to this land. Now, this is a very different argument. When you have one person who's wicked and a thief, and another person who's being honest, and they're clashing, so you have a clash between moral values, immorality, whatever you want to say, there's a dispute. That's not what was going on over here. The shepherds of Lot were saying, how dare you call us thieves? Thieves are those people who run around taking other people's things. That doesn't apply to us, and we have a logical argument that we have every right and we're entitled to graze our flock in other people's fields because Avram's been promised the land, he doesn't have descendants, it's going to go to Lot, and therefore we have every right to take this. Ein ze gezel. They're already making a claim that this is not considered stealing. And that's why Rashi says, how does the pasuk conclude? Vehaknani, vehaprizi, oz yoshev baretz. That the Kananim and the Prizi, they were still dwelling in the land, meaning it hadn't been given to Avram yet.
So now, it was a rationalization.
A very rational, a very much a rationalization, in which they held they had every right to it. Now, a rationalization for what? It's not a rationalization for thievery.
For using what they believe to be theirs. They say it's mine already. It's as good as done.
Okay,
God
now.
God's giving Avram the land. Avram's going to die. It's as good as mine.
Is this a valid argument or a non-valid argument? What are the merits of the argument? The merits of the argument are, well, I mean, look at the facts on the ground. Does Avram have any children? No. Who's the next in kin? Us. So we're the ones who are going to get it. Where are the holes in this argument?
He's still alive.
Okay, there are a couple of major holes in this. A, Avram is still alive. Like, can you imagine a son walking into his dad's house and taking his dad's car, literally just taking it and driving it off his dad's, I still need my car. He says, yeah, but you know what, Dad, you're going to die in a couple of years anyway, and I'm your only son, I'm the only guy, I'm going to get it anyway, so I'll just take it now. That wouldn't go over so well, right? So that's one hole. Where are some other holes in this?
Oh,
hey, Avram himself didn't get it yet. So not only has Avram not been given it himself, he who will receive it is still alive, and he's already taken it. There's one more hole in this.
Who are these shepherds? Are they related to Avram?
They're in his camp. We don't know exactly who they are.
They're not
Maybe they are. Yeah, maybe that I don't know. Apparently, the way that the sages say, they just like group them, like that's his camp, his people doing his thing, representing him. But it's a fair question. Well, there's one more big hole in this. What was the promise? What Abraham was promised the land? Who was it promised to?
His children.
His children. Now, the bottom line is the facts on the ground are Abram's an old man, and he doesn't have any children. But the God who promises Abraham and tells him and performs the miracles that have been performed for him so far has told him, I'm going to give you this land, and I'm going to give it to your children. So whatever level Lot and his people felt that this was a valid promise, that they had some rights to this land because God is promising it to Avram, that same God also said it's going to Avram's children. So Lot and his cohorts basically have said, during the lifetime of Avram, before he's been given it, to people who said they're going to get it who don't yet exist, none of that is relevant. It's already ours. And they make an argument of Ein ze gezel. This is not thievery. We're entitled to this. You're entitled to this? This is yours? In Avram's lifetime, before he's been given it, when it's been promised to his children, and you're like a nephew? So it's a rationalization. What's it a rationalization for? What are they after? Say it in one word.
Land.
Money. At the end of the day, whether or not it's in the form of money, the Yerusha, when you look at the scenario and you see they held they weren't stealing. This is okay. We're allowed to do this. And you say, allowed to do this? What are you talking about? What are they after? They're after money. The sages saw this when they said that the verse in Mishlei, in the 18th chapter of Mishlei, the pasuk says, he who desires, taiva, desire, will be separated. Meaning that, within the simple meaning of the verse, if a person goes after their desires too much, they will become separated, meaning from their friends, from their colleagues, from their families. There is no greater divider, separator, than running after one's desires, because you lose that rational thought, you're after yourself, you're after what you want, and eventually, nifrad, you become separated, you become distant. And the sages say, you know this is a reference to? This is a reference to Lot. The darshan, they expound on this verse, letavo yivakesh nifrad, that's Lot. What taiva, what desire was Lot after? He's after the money. He's after the Yerusha, and such a rationalization. Now, we're going to see this throughout the story. We'll do that now. Where we see, in Lot's approach to what takes place, that the money aspect is driving him. Yeah?
So, a few weeks ago, there was a court decision rendered against the son of Brooke Astor in New York, a fabulously wealthy woman, and her 86-year-old son claimed, just like Lot, that he had a share of her estate, but it was never written in. And he helped himself to her estate along the way because she was older than he was. He was already 86, helping himself to this estate. And the judge said, just like you're saying, this is thievery.
Right.
And he actually went to jail at 86 years of age.
Excellent. Okay, so that's what we have here. So we have the simple meaning of the Pshat Ramban told us what's the fight about and why does Avram separate himself? He separates himself because he says, we got to stay under the radar screen. This is not our land. We're foreigners. We're travelers here. We can't have this kind of dispute making headlines in the local papers. It's not going to be good for us. Says Rashi, quote, Ramban quotes this as well from the sages on a deeper level. Why does Avram say we can't stay together? Because he sees a much deeper problem here. He sees the rationalization from the camp of Lot that says, this is mine. I'm not doing anything wrong. This property belongs to me because it's been promised to you and your children. And frankly, Avram, you don't have any children. And I might as well take it now while you're still alive because, hey, we don't have anywhere else to graze. So I'm therefore not doing anything wrong. Avram says, he pared no me'alai. Now that's the phrase why the sages saw the connection between Lot and Avram. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Latava yivakesh nifrad," will become separate, And what the language Avram uses when he says to Lot, we got to go our own separate way, he pared nai. Same word, you must separate and distance yourself from me.
Because like the question that comes up is, Avram is known as like the greatest influencer. I mean, he's considered the most, he does the most outreach, you can call it.
Yeah.
For his own nephew, this is how he's treating him.
So there is a statement in the sages that takes him to task for that. There is a medrash that the Chaim Shmulevitz in his Sichos Musar quotes that holds Avram accountable and saying, this is how you treat, like you're running after your Megayar, the women, the men, your wife is Megayar, not the women, everyone's working here, and you just throw your nephew out like that.
Until now, he definitely seemed that he took Lot under his wing.
Right.
Until now, so
that, I think that's really, that's where the sages are looking for, there must be something here. In other words, on the simple meaning of the story, as the Ramban told us, we couldn't have a fight. We got to stay under the radar screen. What the sages are looking for is that doesn't fit. That Avram would just, if you just take that simple superficial meaning, like there's a fight under the radar screen, get at it. That doesn't make sense. Avram wouldn't kick Lot just for that. There's got to be more there. And what they're looking for, like there is a problem here that someone with this character trait is going to be either unhelpable or too much of a distraction for what they're trying to accomplish. And therefore, he had to separate. But I'll try to look up the medrash for you later. There is a medrash that says that there was a mistake that Avram was held on some level accountable, like it was so fast to throw him out and not to try to work with him a little bit more.
So I think he did it deliberately. I mean, obviously, I think he felt that there was time to get rid of him.
Excellent. Okay, now. So let's find a couple other references. We go through the story where we'll see this idea will come up. I apologize, it's a little bit warm in here. I know maybe the air wasn't turned on outside. I'm feeling
the door is open.
Get some air in there.
Yeah, there's a breeze.
It's cool.
Okay, so where does Lot go? Let's continue in the Pesukim, and then we'll flip around a little bit to see some other Pesukim as well. Pesuk Yud on page 60, Vayisa Lotes Eina. So Lot's been given this choice. Now, what should Lot's reaction have been? Let's take it from this perspective, given what we just said. Although we're going to set up the question. Here you have Avram Avinu. Now, none of us can really imagine what it's like to be with an Avram Avinu, but one has to imagine Avram Avinu had a certain stature. He just had a certain presence. He was a man who spoke with Hashem regularly. And Avram just says to you, you know, we're really having trouble getting along. I see that this is not going well. I think we should separate. What's your reaction? What should your reaction be?
I'll change. I'll work on it.
Right? Like, no. You're right. I'm sorry. We've been making a mistake. Let me stay. Who did he get all of his riches from? Avram. Now I'm going to say, like, from a spiritual perspective, from a financial perspective, here you have the man who's taking you under his wing, giving you all of your money, and he's an Avraham Avinu, and he says, we should go separate ways. And what does Lot do? He says, all right, you're going this way. Let's check out the terrain and see which way I should go. You don't see any battle, you don't see any fight, you don't see any arguments of not a good idea. Let me stay with you. Vayisa Lotes Eina. Right away, Avram says, you go to the right, I'll go to the left. So Lot says, okay, let's check it out. Which one's going to be better for me? So he lifts up his eyes and he sees Kol Kikar HaYarden Kikulo Mashka. What does he see? He sees the plains of the Jordan and it's filled with a well-watered area that's very fertile. Because this is Lifnei Shacheis Hashem Es Sodom V'Es Amora. It's before Hashem destroyed the places of Sodom and Amora. Kegan Hashem Keretz Mitzrayim. Vayivchar Lo Lot Es Kol Kikor HaYarden. So Lot chose that area because he saw it was fertile. That would be the best place for his flock. Vayisa Lot Mikedem. Big phrase. And Lot traveled Mikedem. From the east. Now, if you know your basic geography of Eretz Yisrael, picture your map of Eretz Yisrael up here. Here's your map. Where's the Jordan? On which side? There, right? Where's Egypt? Down here. So where are they? Right now they went from Egypt up to Eretz Yisrael. They're coming up from here. They're somewhere in here. And Lot's going which direction?
The east.
Right? So is he going from the east or to the east.
From the east.
He's going
to the east, right? What does the Torah say? Where is he going?
From the east.
From the east.
It's from the east here.
That doesn't make any sense, right? Guess who thought of that question?
Rashi.
Thank you. And of course. For those newcomers here, that's the answer almost always. Okay, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you know your basic geography of Eretz Yisrael, he's not traveling from the east, he's really traveling to the east, because he's going, you know, that's the direction he's going. It's a very sophisticated map. Okay. So Rashi tries to work this around. Nasa me Eitzel Avraham, and then five lines down on page 60 in the first column of Rashi. Mikadem, Nasa me Eitzel Avraham, mi Mizracho. He traveled from Avraham, he left Avraham, from his east. Meaning, from Avraham's east, he traveled from there. He's just trying to work out the grammatics. If he's really traveling west, and you said he traveled from the east. Oh, it's not from his east. He's traveling from, because from Avraham's perspective, he's moving to the east of Avraham. So we're trying to work out the pasuk. The text means he traveled from the east, meaning from the east of Avraham's, traveling to his west. That's how Rashi tries to work out the simple meaning, simply to from the east to the west, trying to figure out the meaning of the text. Obviously, what do we expect when you have an odd text like this? The sages are going to say the Torah is trying to hint at something far more significant than just telling us what direction Lot traveled. Because at the end of the day, who cares at all the direction that he's traveling? All you need to tell me is that Lot looked up, he chose the Jordan Valley, and that's where he went. Why do I have a phrase that tells me a direction at all?
But earlier, there was another direction. When they left Mitzrayim, and it tells you where
they went up.
Yeah.
Now, how many other meanings are there for the word kedem? Yeah?
Like kadima, like going forward.
Going forward.
Kedem can also be like the source or the beginning.
Excellent. The beginning. Either from the beginning, mi kedem, or it can mean something that was there first, something from the source. So if we have a pasuk that says, Vayisa lot mi kedem, and Lot traveled Mikedem. So on the one hand, it means from the east. But it also would mean from the beginning. And Lot traveled from the beginning. What would that mean that he traveled from the beginning? Says Rashi Vayisa, Medrash Agada, Hisia Atzmo Mikadmono Shel Olam. He traveled from he who was the beginning of the world. That's who he traveled from. He didn't travel from the east. That's not the reference. The pasuk doesn't mean a direction. It means he traveled from the point of beginning. What's the point of beginning? Reference to Hashem. So that Lot says, "I efshi lo be'Avram ve'lo be'Elokav." I am not interested, not in Avraham, nor in his God. Well, nothing to do with this. Because what does he really want?
Money.
And what can't he have if he's hanging around with Avram and his God?
Money.
Can't have that. Money. So a person says, well, if that's what I want, then I can't have it. And the reason why I can't have it is because of this thing called religion, God and Avram, what it represents. I don't want that. I don't want that because it doesn't work well for me. Anyone here last night, Rabbi Mechanic spoke? He told a story where he was invited to Washington, D.C. to speak to a bunch of big-wig politicians up in D.C. at a room full of 300 politicians, fancy upper-class individuals, and he was giving a discovery, an Eshat Torah discovery program, which he was talking about the truth of Torah and of Judaism, and it was $1,000 a plate event. Every single person who had been there paid $1,000 to be there for a lunch, and he was delivering his 2 or 3 hour lecture, and it was a fundraiser for Eshat Torah. As he liked to joke, he barely even got enough money to cover his gaff expenses from New York to Washington. The money went, there's an Eshat Torah fundraiser. 15 minutes into the lecture, guy gets up and walks out.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, now this as a public speaker, you never do this. He says, so $1,000 the guy paid to come to a lecture. 15 minutes, he's up and out. So he says, excuse me, sir. I'm curious. Can you please help me out? It's 15 minutes and you paid $1,000 to be here. Where are you going? So he said, I'll never forget. The man turned around and said in front of all these politicians, he said, Rabbi, what you're saying makes sense. And I'm not ready to change my life. So I can't stay here.
Interesting.
Well, that's straight.
That is totally straight.
That's straight.
And very powerful. Rabbi Noach Weinberg Zatzal used to often, I have heard this from him a couple of times also, that when he would engage in debates, because that's what he did all the time, he'd get engaged in all these philosophical debates, he would always start it by asking the person, like, if I'm right, and there is a God, are you willing to do X, Y, or Z? Are you really ready today? And a lot of people would say, no, this is just a philosophy. So he said, if the answer is no, you're not willing to change, so then, I forget exactly how he would say it, I want to say it accurately, he would basically get the point, if a person was really having a philosophical debate, then he'd love to engage in the debate. But if a person was claiming, Rabbi, if you prove to me that there's a God, tomorrow I'm keeping Shabbos, he wouldn't engage the debate. Wouldn't engage. I know that that's not true, and you know that that's not true. So if you know that you're not really going to be keeping Shabbos tomorrow, you're never going to hear what I'm saying. Because you just told me that if I'm right, you're keeping Shabbos. And you're not ready to keep Shabbos tomorrow. So you're not going to listen to me. You're going to, whatever I'm going to say, you won't listen with an open mind. If you tell me, listen, I'm not doing it anyway, but I'd love to engage a debate with you. Great, let's have a debate. I'll prove to you this, you'll prove to me that. But if you're making it contingent upon your doing something, and I know you're not going to do it tomorrow, that's a big change. That's not what we're talking about. Because if you already have, your idea is already set in your mind, where you're doing, what you're doing, what you're not doing, and you think that based on what you're going to believe, you're going to change, it doesn't work that way. So what do Chazal see in Lot? Vayisa Lot mi Kedem. He traveled away from Kedem. Doesn't mean the East. He traveled away from God. Avram says, we need a split. And Lot doesn't say, no, keep me around. Lot says, sure thing, I'm out of here. Because this isn't working for me. I have certain things that I'm interested in, and you're preventing me from having them, and therefore I want nothing to do with you. I want nothing to do with your God, because you're keeping me from doing the things that I want to do. And that's where you see a lot of those justifications come from. Now, another fascinating place where you see this with his desire for money, if you check out the actual destruction of Sodom, which is at the end of next week's parsha, in verse 19, chapter 19, excuse me, on page 84, it starts, if you just flip forward. Yeah.
Lot's father, was he the one that jumped in the furnace?
Oh, I'm supposed to know that. Lot's father.
You know, after Abraham came out, and then his brother didn't come out.
I don't remember offhand about which family line that came from. I have to look it up. Which family line?
I think it was Sarah's father. He raised Sarah, kind of, because her father was going to jump in the furnace. I think Lot was another brother. There's Nachor, Haran, and...
Yeah, I have to check out the family lines.
I'm just thinking what we know more about his family, his parents. We might know more about the kind of person he was and why he was...
So look on page 84 is where the 845 is where the story of the actual destruction of Sodom takes place, where the angels come to rescue Lot and get him out of there. And if you look at verses, the paragraph beginning on verse 10 on page 87, they basically say to him in that paragraph in verse 12, the men, the angels say to Lot, whom else do you have in the house? Son-in-law, sons, daughters, get them all out. Verse 13, we are about to destroy this place, for their outcry has become great, so Hashem has sent us to destroy it. Does Lot believe them or not believe them? Look at the next verse, 14. Lot goes out. Went out, pay attention to that word. He went out and spoke to his sons-in-law and the betrothed of his daughters, and he said, get up and leave this place, for Hashem is about to destroy the city. But he seemed like a jester in the eyes of his sons-in-law. Did he believe the angels or did he not believe the angels? He surely did. Where does he go? Lot went out. Where did he go? Pasuk says, Vayetze. Where do you think he went?
He had to leave his house and all his stuff. He had to leave his MTV.
You're ahead of the game. In verse 14, where did Lot go? Vayetze Lot vayidaber el chosanav. Where did he go? Why did he go out? Right, to tell his family. Who is he speaking to in verse 14? Sons-in-law, right? Sons-in-law didn't live in his house with him. They lived in their own homes. So he was in his home. The angels come to him and they say to him, we're going to destroy this place. Does he believe them or not believe them?
Yes.
He believes them. How do we know? Because he picks himself up. He goes to his sons-in-law and he says, get out. Hashem is going to destroy this place. It's clear that he believes them, right? Then what happens? Look at the next pasuk. Just as dawn was breaking, the angels urged Lot on, saying, get up, take your wife and your two daughters who are present, lest you be swept away because of the sin of the city. When it comes time to leave, does he get out or does he not get out?
They have to shove him out.
Verse 16, still he lingered. So the men grasped him by his hand, his wife's hand, and the hand of his two daughters, and they took him out. What happened between when he initially gets the report, gets out of his house, he runs to his sons, and when he says, we're going to be destroyed, get out. Goes back home to gather his stuff. Dawn breaks. Nothing. The angels say, get out of here. Nothing. Still he lingers. They have to take him by the hand and drag him out. What happened?
He didn't want to lose all his stuff.
Says Rashi, that exact point. Well, when he was in his sons-in-law house, that wasn't his stuff. That wasn't so bad. And he was able to see clearly, we got to get out of here. But when he got back into his home, and he's got to start packing up his belongings, all of a sudden, it's not so easy to leave. A person who asked him, do you believe it or do you not believe it? Is the city going to be destroyed or not? Yeah, I believe it. I'm a believer. We got to get out of here. When it comes time to actually putting your hand on the bag, getting out with a little that you can hold and leaving behind everything else, not so simple. Rashi quotes on the phrase that he lingered. Rashi says, "Kedei lahatzil es mamono," in order to save his money, wasn't willing to get out.
So the story of Germany is the same story.
You must say, "I was still on the run." Well, the Jews wouldn't be willing to leave.
Very often they sent away their children, but they stayed.
Because that's what the businesses were, and that's what the finances were.
Maybe it'll go away.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, even till today, I don't want to. It's hard to judge, but there are still places in the world where you need to walk around with a bodyguard, and you say, like, why are you still living there? Only those were my businesses. So I mean, don't speak until you're in their shoes. I don't know what it would mean to lose everything you've worked for your entire life. And you get used to the situation, whatever. But you see, Lot wasn't willing to go. So my Rosh Hashiva, that's our Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldberg, when he discusses this topic that we're talking about here today, points out, so Lot's not willing to get out of his own house. He clearly believes the angels. He knows destruction is coming. Can't get himself out. The angels literally have to take him by the hand and throw him out. Where does he run? So he runs, and as the verses will tell us next week's parsha, look at verses 18 through 21. In verse 20, he runs to a small town called Soar. In verse 21, 22, he replied, I grant you consideration. Hurry, flee there, for I cannot do a thing until you arrive there. He therefore called the name of the city Soar. So he arrives in a small little city called Soar. That's where he gets to. The sun rose upon the earth, and Lot arrives at Soar. Verse 24, Hashem had caused sulfur and fire to rain upon Sidonim and Amorah out of the heaven, overturned the cities. Hold on one second. I meant to look at verse 30. That's where I wanted to go to. Now Lot went up from Soar and settled on the mountain, whose two daughters with him, for he was afraid to remain in Soar. So he dwelt in a cave, he with his two daughters. And that's where the whole story, of course, takes place. So she had turned into the pillar of salt.
Because he looked back.
She looked back, yeah. That happens in between that area, yeah. So Rashiva points out, he runs out of the city of Sodom, and he runs to a city called Soar. And the angels say to him, as we read in verses 20, 21, and 22, no problem, you can stay there, you'll be safe. So the same angels that told him it's going to be destroyed said he's safe there. And what do we see in verse 30? Is he happy to stay there? Is he content? Why not? He was afraid to remain there. It was too close. Look at Rashi, three lines down. Lefisha Haisa Krova Lestom was too close to Stom. He was not comfortable staying there. So where does he go to live?
Nothing.
In a cave. Rashiva points out, you're in a city of Sodom that's going to be destroyed. You believe it's going to be destroyed. Can he get himself out of there? Can't leave. Can't get himself to leave. He believes he's going to be destroyed. So he ends up in a small little city. And now that he's removed from everything, he's already lost everything. He has nothing but the clothes on his back. What changes in his attitude now? Now he looks at it and he says, you know, I think I'm a little bit too close to stone for my comfort. Even though the angel said I'll be safe here, it's a little bit too close. I'm going to go live in a cave. What a change when you remove the blinders of your own personal tava, your own personal desire. When his money was in front of him, death doesn't mean anything. He can't see past that. He can't get himself out of the house. When you're now separated from your possessions, and you have nothing left, and you're in a city which you're told you'll be safe in, he looks at it with a new set of eyes and says, this is a little too close for my comfort. I got to get farther away. I'm going to go live in a cave. That's where the sages saw L'taiva l'yuvakesh nifrad. You are separated, you are pushed apart when you run after your taiva. And in Lot's case, it was a desire for his monetary possessions that allowed him, without a fight, to accept Avram's idea of let's just get out of it. We can't be together. No problem, you're right. I don't want to be with you anyway. Nasa mikedem. He traveled from the kedem, from the first of the world. The other medrash, which, by the way, I neglected to mention before, has another medrash on that phrase, that he traveled from the east. Not that it means that he traveled. The simple meaning is he traveled from the east, which is difficult because he traveled to the west. Traveled from the east, from the west to the east. So Rashi quoted that he traveled from Hashem, the first of the first thing in the world. There's another medrash that says he traveled first, Mikedem, meaning he had decided to travel way before Avram even suggested this. He knew this was already, I don't even want to be with you anymore. It was Avram who was the one who provided him with all of this great wealth, but now that he had it, he wanted nothing to do with him, and he was ready to move aside, and you see that this follows him through with his inability to get out of his city, but then once you've removed that from him, a whole different side comes out. And that's often the way it goes. It's literally our desires, literally are blinders in front of our eyes. When you ever sometimes have a, this is often why you ask others for advice. Always ask somebody. And you sometimes hear their answer and you think, wow, that's so wise. It's not wise, it's just being rational. Because you're blinded by, you're so involved in it. You have so many personal desires in this, in your debate that you have. You can't see straight. And very often when you ask a third party, they'll say, oh, that's obvious, that doesn't make any sense, this is what you need to do. But it's so hard to see that when you yourself are in there. The justifications come so quickly of, I'm not stealing anything, this is mine. This is yours? Well, it hasn't even been given to Abraham yet. The man is still alive. It's been promised to his children. What do you mean you think it's actually yours? When you really want something, you will actually think and believe, this belongs to me already, it's my property, it's my land, I'm not stealing. And that's where you see the rationalizations, the difficulty when you're blinded by a desire that you have, how hard it was. And Avram said, I can't be with you. We can't function together, and therefore he separates himself. And Lot, as we see, does not put up much of an argument against that. I will mention in one brief sentence, that which is a whole nother shir, but by next year I'm sure we'll all forget, so it's okay. When Lot goes down, what merit does Lot have that he was saved by from this destruction of Sodom?
His daughters.
So the sages say it was not his daughters. Even that would be, that should have been, that's the obvious answer, because you see, when his daughters, he was saved, not, I don't know if you remember that when the guests, when the angels came, he was willing to sacrifice everything for them, to bring his guests into his home. But that's not what the sages say he merited. What he merited being saved was because when he went down to Egypt with Avram and Sarah, and Avram says, this is my sister, Lot knew the truth, and he didn't say anything. What did he have to gain if he would have said something?
Could have gotten rid of Avraham right then.
Could have gotten rid of Avraham. He could have gotten riches. He could have claimed something to power. He could have said, I have information for you if you'll give me this. He could have had lots of potential riches at his fingertips with the information that he knew, and he didn't say anything. And it was for that that he merited being saved from the destruction of Sodom, because that's where his struggle was, where he had an opportunity to make a buck at the expense of his uncle, and he didn't. For him, that was a task. And that's why, that's where the sages point to his merit that he was willing to be, that he was able to be saved from, is because it all comes back to that idea. But that's where we see a little bit of the description of the story of Lot and Avram. All right, we got through most of it at least. Okay, have a great week. Great day.